NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter has completed its 50th flight on Mars. The first aircraft on another world reached the half-century mark on April 13, traveling over 322 meters in 145.7 seconds. The helicopter also achieved a new altitude record of 18 meters before alighting near the 800-meter-wide Bailva crater. With Flight 50 in the mission logbook, the helicopter team plans to perform another repositioning flight before exploring the Fall River Pass region of Jezero crater. Lori Glaze, the director of the Planetary Science Division at NASA headquarters in Washington, proclaimed, "Just as the Wright brothers continued their experiments well after that momentous day at Kitty Hawk in 1903, the Ingenuity team continues to pursue and learn from the flight operations of the first aircraft on another world. The history-making rotorcraft has recently been negotiating some of the most hazardous terrain it has encountered on the Red Planet." Ingenuity landed on the Red Planet in February of 2021 attached to the belly of the Mars Perseverance rover. It will soon mark the two-year anniversary of its first flight, which took place on 2021 April the 19th. Designed as a technology demonstration that would fly no more than five times, the helicopter was intended to prove powered, controlled flight on another planet was possible. But Ingenuity exceeded expectations and transitioned into being an operations demonstration. Every time Ingenuity goes airborne, it covers new ground and offers a perspective no previous planetary mission could achieve. Imagery from the helicopter has not only demonstrated how aircraft could serve as forward scouts for future planetary expeditions, but it has even come in handy for the Perseverance team. By testing the helicopter's limits, engineers are gathering flight data that can be used by engineers working on designs for possible future Mars helicopters. That includes the people designing the Mars Sample Return Campaign's proposed sample recovery helicopters. Since leaving the relatively flat confines of Jezero crater's floor on January the 19th, Ingenuity has flown 11 times into riskier terrain, setting new speed and altitude records of 23 kilometers per hour and 18 meters along the way. Although the deep chill of winter and regional dust events, which can block the sun's rays from reaching the helicopter's solar panel, have abated, Ingenuity continues to brown out at night. As a result, the helicopter base station on the Perseverance rover needs to search for the rotorcraft signal each morning at the time Ingenuity is predicted to wake up. And when the helicopter does fly, it now must navigate rugged and relatively uncharted terrain, landing in spots that can be surrounded by hazards. Josh Anderson is Ingenuity Operations Lead at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California. He notes that the helicopter is now in riskier terrain than when on the floor of Jezero crater. He says, "We are not in Martian Kansas anymore. We're flying over the dried-up remnants of an ancient river that is filled with sand dunes, boulders, and rocks, and surrounded by hills that could have us for lunch. And while we recently upgraded the navigation software onboard to help determine safe airfields, every flight is still a white-knuckler. This year, Ingenuity has become a frequent flyer. Beyond facing more challenging terrain, Ingenuity will also fly at a greater frequency in the coming days because the helicopter needs to remain within electronic earshot of the rover. With its auto-nav capability, Perseverance can travel hundreds of meters each day." Anderson noted, "Ingenuity relies on Perseverance to act as a communications relay between it and mission controllers here at JPL. If the rover gets too far ahead or disappears behind a hill, we could lose communications. The rover team has a job to do and a schedule to keep. So it's imperative Ingenuity keeps up and is in the lead whenever possible." Perseverance recently completed exploring Fol Drygarn, a scientific target that may contain hydrated silica, which is of strong astrobiological interest. It is currently headed to Mount Julian, which will provide a panoramic view into nearby Bailva crater. The Ingenuity team at JPL have been keen to point out their feats of ingenuity, pun intended. Built with many off-the-shelf components, such as smartphone processors and cameras, Ingenuity is now 23 Earth months and 45 flights beyond its expected lifetime. The rotorcraft has flown for over 89 minutes and more than 11.6 kilometers. Teddy Zanettos is Ingenuity team lead at JPL. He says, "When we first flew, we thought we would be incredibly lucky to eke out 5 flights. We have exceeded our expected cumulative flight time since our technology demonstration wrapped by 1,250% and expected distance flown by 2,214%. Surpassing expectations like this comes at a cost, however. With some helicopter components showing signs of wear and the terrain becoming more challenging, the Ingenuity team recognizes that every great mission must eventually come to an end." Zanettos adds, "We have come so far, and we want to go farther. But we have known since the very beginning our time at Mars was limited, and every operational day is a blessing. Whether Ingenuity's mission ends tomorrow, next week, or months from now is something no one can predict at present. What I can predict is that when it does, we'll have one heck of a party."
The Perseverance rover and Ingenuity were launched from the United States in 2020. As the preparations for the launch went on, the Kids Learning Tube recorded this song.
"We're on a mission to Mars with ULA. United Launch Alliance is making launches to Ray. We're on a mission to Mars with ULA, bringing the Perseverance rover to Mars in 2020. Before we launch, we need to plan in advance. If we don't time this right, we'll be launching by chance. The Earth and Mars are moving on different lines, so we have to wait for is close to Earth in time. When we launch, we need to create the right trajectory and aim at a point in space where Mars will be 7 months from July. You see, if we launch between July 20th and August 11th, it sets us forth to reach Mars in 7 months when it's closest to Earth. We're on the launch pad waiting to leave. We'll take off in T-minus 6, 5. Send the Perseverance to Mars to propel our knowledge forth. On the Atlas V rocket, let me show you my parts. I have 4 solid rocket boosters, I'd say that's a good start. My RD-180 engine has a lot of thrust, and the Atlas booster on this mission is a must. I have 2 5M payload fairings, there's a left and a right. The house is my center, which is crucial for this flight. The center brings the sky crane and rover into orbit, then shoots it to Mars to discover more about its planet. Shortly after liftoff, the Atlas rocket begins to pitch for the proper flight path while minimizing the pressure on it. The SRBs are released at 1 minute 49 seconds. Once all SRBs are released, then they are done. At 4 minutes 22 seconds, propellant levels deplete, and the main engine shuts down. This part of my mission is complete. 6 seconds later, the Atlas Centaur separation activates. This is the time to release the booster stage. 10 seconds later, Centaur's first engine burn begins, sending the Centaur into circular orbit on its ascent. At 11 minutes, cutoff of Centaur's main engine occurs. The Centaur will now start to coast, but don't be concerned. The Centaur main engine is restarted for the second of 2 burns, providing the thrust for Centaur to escape Earth's orbit in turn. 7 minutes later, the second cutoff of the main engine happens. Centaur coasts for 5 minutes for the spacecraft separation. At 56 minutes, Centaur releases Perseverance with power into hyperbolic orbit at 26,000 miles per hour. 7 months later, the gravity on Mars will capture the spacecraft you see and hold on to it until the sky crane is set to release. The sky crane is used for entry, descent, and landing of the rover on Mars. Mars's surface. This job is so demanding. There's 7 minutes to get from Mars's atmosphere to its surface, going from 13,000 miles per hour to zero without a miss. When the spacecraft is released after entering the atmosphere, its parachute deploys to slow the sky crane that's shown here. The parachute releases and the sky crane boosters ignite. It hovers the rover above Mars's surface at the right height. The crane lowers the rover with cables above Mars's surface, then releases the rover safely on its wheels with bliss. NASA's Perseverance rover has two main objectives, you see: to find signs of life and sample materials they be. This is the first part of a return mission to Earth, with ULA exploring the known universe. We're on a mission to Mars with ULA. United Launch Alliance is making launches to Ray. We're on a mission to Mars with ULA, bringing the Perseverance rover to Mars in 2020.
Kids Learning Tube with one of their many, many, many fun songs that they do. Kenneth Farley works at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory as project scientist for the Perseverance Mars 2020 rover. He recently gave this outline of plans for the future investigations of the rover.
So as Minnie said, I'm project scientist for the Perseverance mission. And before I tell you what is ahead of us for Perseverance that is going to feed into MSR, I want to let everybody know, if you don't already know this, the samples that we've collected so far that have been put down in this first cache have been very carefully documented in a series of documents we call the initial reports. So my goal here is just to tell you a little bit about what Perseverance is going to be doing going forward. We are no longer double sampling. We are done with that phase. We are not preparing to deploy another cache. We're just single sampling. And we have 23 tubes on board. So I want to tell you what we're going to be doing between now and when we make the rendezvous with the MSR missions. So this mission has turned out to go through a series of what we call campaigns. First campaign was on the crater floor where we found igneous rocks. Second campaign was on the delta front, where we essentially got a cross-section of the sedimentary rocks deposited in the lake and in the river system that filled the lake. And now we've driven up on top of the fan, where we are seeing what we believe to be fluvial deposits, river deposits. What we call the upper fan campaign is expected to last until the middle of October or so, depending on what exactly we find. And the goal here is to explore, characterize, interpret, and sample rocks deposited on the top of this feature, what I think to be mostly fluvial. And we expect to collect during this campaign more sandstones. We collected sandstones low down in the section. These will be sandstones from higher up in the section and may represent different provenance, different grain size. Conglomerates, each and every grain in a sandstone or a conglomerate represents a rock that has been brought from somewhere else. That's very exciting. And we are also looking for hydrated silica. There's reason to believe that there is a hydrated silica deposit based on orbital data from CRISM, which would be very interesting from a biosignature preservation point of view. Also looking for sedimentary rocks with clay-sized grains. These are important for organic concentration and preservation. And we may also find either hydrothermal or diagenetic features of both general scientific interest, but also from an astrobiological point of view. And one of the things that I think will be really interesting is we are going to start seeing what I call here exotic boulders. These are boulders brought from up in the headwaters. These are not little tiny things. These are big boulders. And so potentially every one of those is a piece of Mars that we may or may not see in our future. So we'll spend some time looking at those, and we may choose to sample them if they look especially interesting. So that's the upper fan campaign. After that, we move into the region called the crater margin. Looks different. This is a carbonate and olivine-rich area, and it may be a deposit produced in the lake. The carbonate may actually be lacustrine. That would be a wonderful discovery. But this is the area that we will explore next, probably through about spring of next year. And we will likely collect olivine and carbonate, which may be sedimentary. It may also be igneous. It may be similar to the crater floor rocks. And we will reach the inner rim of Jezero Crater and start looking for rocks that have been brought up by the Jezero impact itself And they may also, in association with that impact, be hydrothermally altered. So we're acquiring yet a different set of samples once we get up there. And then finally, in the out years, the plan is that we will move out of Jezero crater, move up the crater rim onto the Nili Planum area, the highlands surrounding the crater, where we will discover a completely different geology, where we find different geology than exists in the crater. The pre-impact crust, there may be hydrothermal systems associated with the Jezero impact up there. There is likely to be mega breccia, large blocks of deep crustal rock brought up by either Jezero or even more interestingly from Isidus, the giant impact basin, not too far off from Jezero crater. Phyllosilicates, olivine and olivine carbonate. So again, a big diversity of samples to be acquired through something like 2030 for when the rendezvous happens. In that time, we will also survey, validate the landing site for MSR, deliver the baseline cache to the sample retrieval lander. So that is the plan forward.